Welcome to Be Customer Led, where we'll explore how leading experts in customer and employee experience are navigating organizations through their own journey to be customer led and the actions and behaviors employees and businesses exhibit to get there. And now, your host, Bill Stakos.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Be Customer Led. I've got a very cool guest for us to speak with and for you all to listen to this week, Jessica Noble. Jessica and I met just a couple of weeks ago, and she had this amazing perspective on CX and the work she does. She is an author. She recently published a book a couple of months ago called The 5 Customer Experience Mistakes That Are Causing Profit Erosion. And you'll get that in the theme of this conversation as well. And that's why I absolutely had to have Jessica on the show. Like, she is an amazing individual at connecting CX to real business results. And that's why I think that her company gets results. Her company is called Magnetic Experiences. You've been doing this for about 3 years, Jessica, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Welcome on the show. Thanks for joining us. I'm really excited about the conversation. I think there's going to be so much valuable takeaways here for listeners that and like real quality stuff. Like, you guys do really cool work. So thanks so much. So I always ask our guests your journey. Like, where did you come from? Why did you get into this work? And, you know, it's kind of crazy work sometimes. Like, what got you like loving the work that you do and then even starting your own company and all the success you've had there?
Yeah. So like most people, I think it was an accident. When I started my career, it was very strategically mapped out. I actually started in sales at the advice of my father, who said everybody should have to do sales so they know it's not expensive dinners and games of golf. I rapidly moved into program management because someone told me that it was like running your own business because you're looking at all the facets, risk, communication, budget, et cetera. And at one point, this is about 20 years ago, I was recruited by Nationwide Insurance to run one of their top 20 initiatives. And it was to really reinvent their agent experience. And cool. For those of you who don't know Nationwide, their agents at the time didn't work for Nationwide. They had options to sell many types of insurance. So really, they needed to captivate those agents to want to sell what Nationwide offered. And I loved working on that program. We focused on agents. We listened to agents. We designed experiences with their input. We didn't know what customer experience was or the discipline was. Right. So it was done based on instinct and strategy that didn't have all of the tools defined that there are today. And I left after that program after about 4 years and got into consulting. Yeah, started out in healthcare consulting and rapidly moved into more general business strategy around operational excellence, change management, digital transformation. And one day my boss came to me and said, so we need to start a practice around this thing called customer experience. And you love to do new things. What do you think? You want to start it? And I said yes before I thought about it.
Yeah, how do you say no to that, right?
But as I started diving into this thing called customer experience, I realized it was so much of what I'd done at Nationwide, but it was a discipline that had matured exponentially. And so now there was really these defined areas to focus on, just toolboxes overflowing. And that was really an eye-opener because I didn't know that that was happening in this thing called customer experience.
Right. So I'm curious, like, why did the work that you were doing get more into the operational side? It sounds like more lean and more agile, some elements in there. And then how excited were you when you were, I mean, at some point did you say, wow, it's kind of almost like the same toolkit on some level, or even like the jargon is the same on some level, just maybe some different words. How was that transformation for you, like going back?
So because I started out in sales, I've always looked at things probably more from the outside in than some of the typical people who are in operations. But as you alluded to, when people dive into things like Six Sigma and Lean, they really had customer experience at the heart of what they did long before CX was a thing. I mean, their first thing is to provide customers with value.
That's right.
And when I saw that connection, it was this eye-opener of how issues in processes, technology, are really impacting everything downstream, similar to in program management, in requirements. It's if you get those requirements wrong, quality at the output is going to be magnified, and it's so much more expensive to fix it at that point.
That's right. Rework is nasty.
Yeah, so just getting that more holistic view of the operation side of a business, sales and marketing, and how really it's this ecosystem that if something is broken, everything's affected.
So fast forward from there, mm-hmm. you start your own company.
Yeah.
And now I'm really curious, like, why did you go do that? Because that's like one of the biggest leaps of faith and personal commitments that anybody can make almost, right? I mean, well, there are a lot of other bigger ones, I guess, but having children is probably one of those. But like, what was that like for you, and what drove you to say, hey, I can do this actually? And bringing together, I think like you do, that the operational excellence piece, but then the CX toolkit, and working with a very defined set of companies. You focus solely on small and mid-sized enterprise businesses. Mm-hmm. Tell me a little bit about why that space more than going to work for an enterprise. I think I have an idea, but I don't want to let the cat out of the bag.
Yeah.
So I'm curious to hear.
So I would say it was kind of the convergence of a lot of factors. One, I had started to realize what I love to do. You know, when you work in consulting, you work with hundreds of customers, and reflecting, there was a profile of a type of company that I like to work with. But what I was finding is, as I worked for mid-sized companies that were getting acquired by these gargantuan companies, that companies were really focusing on enterprise. That was like the gold standard, cream of the crop, that you've arrived to work with enterprise. And it's not what I enjoy. I've worked with them. I've had good clients. So if you're listening to this and I've worked with you before and you're enterprise, I may still love you. But it's not what I love. And so after working with a few very large companies that were acquired by companies that were either ethically not aligned with me or they were solely focused on enterprise, I just realized that if I want to focus in the SMB space, I'm going to have to do it myself. And with my personality, there's no shortage of confidence in myself, which probably could be the bane of my existence, but I knew I could do it. Running a consulting business in a lot of ways is like running your own business, not a one-for-one. In program management, also a lot of overlap between running your own business. So I decided to pull the trigger, never looked back. And my mom asked me once, is it more stressful running your own business? And without a doubt, it is far less stressful for me to run my own business, because if I want to experiment with something, try something new, I don't have to spend days, weeks, months putting together decks on why I think we should try it just to fast fail. We just try it. And if it fails, it fails, and we try something else. And there's a lot of freedom in that that I love.
And I think that's probably why a lot of folks go out and do what you did as well. Well, kudos to you for having the guts to do it. If you think about sort of the proliferation of CX and from way back when, that's a wrong way to say it, because that means that you're old, which you're not.
well,
maybe way back in the day when I was starting out in the work, because I am old, it was still new. And I often hear a lot of companies define CX differently, right? Mm-hmm. You know, and when I came into the organization that I came in, people thought it was like just doing surveys. I think a lot of companies still probably do think that. And it's really an expansive toolkit end to end, and has roots in so many different disciplines, and just has brought them together in a really interesting way. What's your definition of customer experience?
So the definition that I would use that is most simplistic is customer experience is your customer or potential customer's perception of your company, whether that's direct or indirect. It could be their exposure to a billboard, what they overhear at a block party, or direct interaction. So it's their perception, period, end of statement. In terms of customer experience as a profession or a discipline,
yeah,
as you mentioned, it has roots in a lot of things. But what I think happens is we lose focus on that very simplistic definition. So having said that, how would you have answered the question?
You know, I would not. So, well, one, from a customer's perspective, I feel like I would define customer experience as the visible and non-visible interactions with your brand, mm-hmm. with your products and services, your people. And it goes beyond where the company or the customer would buy your product and where they may just continuously use it or maybe just, you know, throw it in the trash after. Mm-hmm. And, you know, from a discipline perspective, I'm a huge believer in bringing together a couple of things. One is you've got to start with a deep understanding of your client's needs and behaviors.
Oh, bless you.
You drive design off of that insight and that new intelligence. And you have capabilities to deliver that not only throughout the business, but you've also set up processes to democratize that insight to also drive culture change. So I think about insights, analytics, I think about design, and I think about culture. And those are the three primary pillars for me from a customer experience perspective.
Yeah, love that. Yeah.
I'm not saying that I'm right. It's just the way that I've always thought about it. And you know, until someone proves me wrong or says I shouldn't do the work anymore, then I'll change my mind, I guess. One of the things that I loved in our conversation that it kind of blew my mind when you said it. I won't describe the interaction, but you said that you overheard someone talking about what your company does. And you said, no, we don't do that. We do X.
Yep.
And in the customer experience space, there's so much jargon, right? There's journey map, service blueprints, HCD, design thinking, personas, archetypes. Like the list can literally go on for the next 5 minutes. There are so many CX leaders and practitioners, frankly, struggling to get buy-in and an executive, not just an executive level, but even at like the individual kind of, you know, participant level in a company. What advice do you have for these individuals on how they can drop the jargon and just get down to business? Because that's a huge thing I think people are really struggling with.
I would agree. And having spent so much time in consulting, that's a common pitfall. I have no doubt I fell into it many times where you just string together big words and people pay you really healthy hourly rates. But to quote someone, Albert Einstein, if you can't explain something simply, you don't understand it well enough. And that has always stuck in my mind since the first time I heard it, that if I can't break something down to the most simplistic explanation, then I don't understand it. And in my mind, I usually bounce things off of my mom, for example. She's smart, but she is, or when she was working, she's retired, was in speech pathology in the school district. So not a common set of fancy jargon. Yeah. And could I explain to her what we do without throwing in all of the fancy terms of journey mapping and VOC and personas and whatnot. And in terms of overhearing someone, a lot of people say, well, we do customer experience. I don't know what doing customer experience means. For our business, we help companies recapture strong and sustainable profit margins by plugging money leads and elevating employee and customer experiences. So it's a means to an end. And I think understanding what that end is for your company and your customers is 100% the most important thing. If you don't understand what that ultimate goal is for your company, what's that number one driving metric? And then the same for your customers, you're going to miss the mark. And that's where we start stringing together all of these terms that a lot of them, they're tools. That's all they are. They are tools. And knowing when to apply them and how is important, but that's not what you do, or hopefully it's not what you do.
Do you find that in your work, you're bringing in other disciplines to kind of, look, every customer might have a different problem. Like, do you rely more on the CX side? Do you rely more on sort of the Six Sigma Lean side? Like, at some point they all kind of, you know, can conflate, but where do you gravitate towards now? Or is it really different for every client?
It's really different for every client. And we have business advisors in our company that have different primary areas of expertise. So Six Sigma, Lean, marketing, sales, customer service. But everyone, all of our advisors are very capable at applying the customer lens to whatever their area of expertise is. So in terms of where we focus the most, it does depend on the situation. We bring in other disciplines all the time. And actually, one of the ones that I personally enjoy the most is when we're bringing in finance. I get probably the most traction with CFOs because the modern CFO, their focus is risk. Mm-hmm. That's what they do, is identify risk, mitigate risk. What are the biggest risks for any company? Well, revenue not staying consistent, profit not staying consistent. And what causes that to happen? Customers spending less, churning, not getting new customers, and all that's of those right. things. So that's probably my favorite discipline to bring in is finance, but supply chain is massive. Every commitment that a company makes, if it's product driven, is going to be impacted by their supply chain and their ability to manage it. So I love bringing in multiple disciplines. And I think every discipline needs to have customer experience expertise and some of the basics just to build up those muscles across your organization.
Mm-hmm. Do you see a lot of, I mean, I'm sure you work with, well, at least maybe in like the bigger mid-sized companies, there may be a CX team in there. Do you see relationships between the person who's leading that organization and the CFO? Or is that still like you, when you come in, you say, we've got to bring you two together and here's why?
I would say I see two very common scenarios. If it's a CX team, very rarely do they have the cross-functional relationships, including with finance, that I believe they need to be successful. Because really, to quote Jean Bliss, actually I won't quote her, but it's her concept, is that C-suite customer experience leader is really the duct tape for that group. And so if you're not working cross-functionally and you're not really the one focused on that the most, I won't go so far as to say you're failing, but you're missing what you could be doing.
Or maybe just the long-term viability. You'll have wins over the next year, yeah. 2 years. You'll see improvements. Things will be better. Yeah. But what you're saying is to really make a long-term commitment and have that viability of a team that's going to grow maybe and continue to deliver value. Yeah. You've got to have that cross-functional. Do you see a lot of Do you see, like, I was speaking with someone on the podcast last week, and we were talking about governance generally. Are you seeing that happening a lot or not? Or is that, like, how does that manifest?
So what I have seen a lot of is that CX teams are the ones introducing the concept of governance into an organization. And it may be following a program management or a PMO that has attempted to do the same and may have done it well for their individual area of the business. But where I think both disciplines are running into a challenge is the ability to get that governance at a high enough level for it to have the span across all functions. And so I think the CX leaders that I've seen have the most success in SMB grew out of that business. Their background may not be customer experience, but they have the relationships and they know how to work cross-functionally. And then they can teach themselves customer experience.
Sure.
You know, hire experts.
Hire for it. Yeah, that's right.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I love that view. I've often had sort of the idea that there's so much out there on why CX teams are failing, et cetera, or at least not having more success than they've had in the past. One of the reasons, this is my personal view, is the proliferation of customer experience as a practice, as a discipline, whatever you want to call it. There are folks that were like the best call center agent supervisor or the best salesperson. They're being promoted in these roles saying, hey, we need to focus on this. You do great with customers. You can lead it. But they don't come out of the practice or don't have that discipline. And maybe they're not hiring for it. And maybe that's why some of them are failing. But I'm curious why you think some teams are failing. I mean, you may see this all. Well, this is why you do what you do and why you're successful, frankly. But like, what are, do you think that's, and I'd love to be proven wrong, do you think that's why it's happening sometimes? Or are there different reasons that you're seeing? Is it the connection back to the sort of the business results and the client customer outcomes? What do you think are the biggest drivers?
Yeah, I do think that one of the biggest ones that you mentioned is we're bringing people out of very distinct areas of the business. So they have a very focused skill set. I've also seen people thrive when they have moved out of that. But I would say a couple of things are causing the issues that we're seeing. I would say one is we have customer experience teams who don't have a grounding in business strategy and understanding what is our company's core business strategy and what are the core metrics that drive our company. So for example, if you're professional services, it may be utilization. And if you're not hitting that number, nobody is going to care about anything else. So you have to understand that and base your strategy on top of that to support that or underneath it to support it. So I would say that's one of the biggest things. The other I would say is, as you have mentioned, it's that business case and tying it to financial results, but demonstrating value early and often, which is one of the biggest failures of digital transformation, any of these mega endeavors, is, okay, in 4 years, what we're going to see, and it's like, well, in 4 years, what we're going to want is totally different.
You could be a different company in 4 years, right? I mean,
yeah.
Look where we are now. Like no one, I saw a meme someone shared. So like, well, my 5-year plan, five years ago, just kind of blown out of the water. Yeah, I mean, no one would, right? So,
nope.
So that's interesting. So, and this is years ago, I was having a conversation with someone in the CX space and I said, if we can flip the script, and there's so many people out there, like you got to create wow experiences and wow experiences can be really expensive.
Yes.
If you can say, if you can tell your president or CEO, whoever that is, the CFO, I can design experiences that will help us achieve 10% revenue growth, but also that the customer will find helpful, meaningful, add value back in their lives or buy the product that they're going to use constantly. That's what I love about the work personally, because you can look at both sides and bring them together. They're not mutually exclusive. In fact, they have to go hand in hand. Otherwise, it's just kind of busy work and you're just a cost center to the company, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And what I would highlight in that approach is more often than not with our clients, we start with some of the improvements to existing experience so that one, we demonstrate that we provide value. But even more so that the company starts to build their confidence in tackling something, seeing results, tackling something bigger, seeing results. So that when you come to, okay, let's bite off something new, design something new, whether it's a product, a service, a market that you're going to reach out to, and you start from scratch and your business case is so much more complex, you have a lot more confidence in the ability to actually execute on that business case.
Got it. I love that. Let's switch gears a little bit. I want to talk about your book. I'm curious. So again, 5 CX mistakes you don't know you're making that cause profit erosion. You can get it on Amazon. Really, really good read, fast read. But a lot of just great tangible things in there. What were you seeing in your consulting practice outside of these 5 mistakes, maybe, I guess, but like, what drove you to write the book?
So the thing that really drove me to write it is just the practical advice that I find myself giving on a very regular basis to companies in a very simple, executable, you can take action on it right away and see results. And if CX practitioners who are very deep in their expertise around customer experience, they're probably going to read it and say, okay, this is not cutting edge. We're not inventing new theory. I'm not. None of it is new, but it's breaking it down to the most simplistic. This is how we need to apply what this remedy is and the results that we will get. And so working with customers, just seeing these consistent mistakes that are so painful and just invade a company and erode everything. They erode the margins, they erode the customer experience, the employee experience, and how if you can address those, the lift that a company will get to profit margins, customer experience, and employee experience is extraordinary. We've seen it. We've seen our clients get it. And there is nothing more satisfying than that for me.
Yeah. Seeing the company you work for win, mm-hmm. right? Whether you're working on behalf of them, like in your case, or you're working in some part of that business, seeing a business win, you do kind of have a little spring in your step walking through those doors every day or logging onto Zoom as everybody else is doing. Yeah. So in the book, right, there's one mistake, I mean, that I loved. I don't know why it was, but I kept on going back to the one mistake. Mm-hmm. And it's called relying on heroes to deliver great experiences. Now, I won't go into it, but I'd love for you to describe for our listeners what you mean by that mistake being made. How do you identify it even? And how do you measure it?
Yes. Yeah. Great question on all fronts. So in terms of these hero employees, it sounds like, oh, heroes. Awesome. We need more. Okay. Stop. Full stop. That's really expensive. But how I define the problem is really it's an over-reliance on these employees that step in to deliver and more often to fix an experience for clients repeatedly. So you could also refer to them as the firefighters, the ones that you're always mm-hmm. pulling from what they should be doing and saying, hey, solve this because a customer's super frustrated, or we made a commitment and we're struggling to deliver on it. And hero employees are incredible. Typically, how they're getting results is because they've been around a long time. They know how to navigate systems, circumvent certain processes, get things done in roundabout ways and channels. But there's a couple of problems with this. One, they're going to be expensive. I mean, a human running around solving problems is not typically the best solution. The second is it started out because your customer is not happy. They didn't get what they wanted the first time. So it's an uphill battle. Yeah. And third, it's oftentimes masking underlying issues that aren't bubbling up to the surface because they're fixing it. And so people assume, okay, that issue's gone. Well, it's gone, but you're going to solve it 5 more times next week. And I actually had, I put this on LinkedIn yesterday. It was the perfect / most painful, expensive example of this. And I think a lot of people can relate. I had a airline ticket, but the airline canceled my flight because of COVID. Mm-hmm. I spent 5 months trying to get a $2,000 refund.
Oh my gosh.
went through 5 rounds of disputes with my credit card. And I mean, I list it all out. Every employee I talked to from either the credit card or the airline, they were all phenomenal, which I don't know when that happens, but they were all phenomenal. They couldn't solve the issue. Now, they didn't necessarily know until I had to call back and say, that thing you requested because what I was asking for seemed so appropriate. And then a system, a process, something was shutting it down and I had to call back in. And finally, yesterday, a woman that I was talking to at the airline, she'd been there a long time. And so she knew the system. She's like, I can see the problem. She's like, I'm going to try my best to solve this for you. She's like, let me see. And basically my flight, while it was canceled by the airline, it was tagged in their system as rescheduled, which meant I wasn't eligible for a refund, even though I've got the email that says canceled. So talking to 10 people over 5 months, I'm clearly not going to be thrilled.
Sure.
But these employees have got to be so frustrated too, because they can't accomplish what they think is so obvious. And all that time spent just to provide me what we should have provided me 5 months ago.
Right. And either they don't know what the problem is because they don't have the proper training, or they don't have the authority to change that on their own, maybe.
But that's 100%. Yeah. They don't, they're not empowered.
But this person, and I love your description of the hero. They get to, they've been there long enough. They know how to work around processes, but those processes are broken. So you're 100% right. So next week, there's 5,000 customers behind that you solved one, but guess what? The deluge will come again next week. Here comes the tsunami. But here's also the problem. And what I love about that mistake is they're circumventing the process. They're not fixing it, or even worse, they're not going to someone saying, and I understand why, you're kind of telling some people your baby's ugly. Right? You got to fix this, or no one wants to air anybody else's dirty laundry. So, and sometimes heroes won't do that. They'll just be like, I've got, you know, I'm a dog and a bone. I've got to solve this customer issue. I'll worry about, they should be worrying about the process versus as a company coming together. And here's where the culture piece that you were talking about before, rallying around the problem. And what does that look like from a metrics perspective and saying, let's just go fix this. Who cares if it's broken? No one's at fault. Let's just go do it.
Yeah, I have told a lot of C-suite CEOs in my day that their babies were ugly. I haven't been kicked out of an office yet, but I don't know that I land on everybody's Christmas card list because it is. It's really hard. And quite frankly, it's not even that they don't want to hear it. It's they aren't ready to believe it because they know the experience they were delivering 3 years ago, 5 years ago, 10 years ago before they were scaling. And so it's really hard to wrap your mind around how did it get worse? Well, your company grew and it became more complex. But when it comes to hero employees, yes, sometimes they don't raise the issue, but I would say more often than not, what happens is hero employees, we love them. They also are really irritating because they're complaining all the time. They're not complaining. They're telling you the facts, but you discount it. It's similar to the customers who are complaining. And I've heard CEOs say, oh, they just want more. They want more and more. We can't deliver it. They have unrealistic expectations. But when you dig in, their expectations are realistic. You're just not meeting them.
Right. And they're probably not even crazy expectations. They're just kind of what the market is delivering in some way already.
Right. Yeah. And so we're discounting them and not saying, okay, I need to find out more. In your original question, it was, okay, well, how do we identify this? And because I work in SMB, I usually tell them, let's measure the magnitude of this issue. So let's pretend it's a small credit card, a small airline from my example. Okay. About how many times have we tried to fix this for someone? Just, I don't know, 5, 10, is it once a day, once a month, once a year? And let's say it's once a week. Okay, about how long did it take us to fix it? We got the little napkin. It took us 4 hours once a week. That's 16 hours a month. And So when you see that magnitude, it's okay, now solving it is worth at least that much. Setting aside the fact that you're going to improve customer satisfaction if you do it right the first time.
Yeah. So you take those 200 hours a year, you think about what the hourly rate is of an employee, mm-hmm. you multiply that out, and then you say, it'll take us 5 hours to go fix this, right? One person can do it. Maybe they're the hero. Maybe they're the hero employee. Maybe they'll be the hero after they fix it, right?
Yep.
And that's an easy cost benefit analysis right there that you can show someone.
Yeah. I think
really that's simple.
Yeah, it is. It's really straightforward. And I think the desire from a customer experience minded person is to quantify the lift on customer satisfaction, employee engagement, and all of those things are valuable. However, in the small and mid-sized space, and I would say even many enterprises, but in our space, a lot of times that's where you grind to a halt, because even if you could measure the value of that uptick for your company, convincing people of the value is going to take a long time for a lot of companies. Now, as you mature in customer experience and show, oh, hey, we did that thing and we saved money, captured more revenue. By the way, we also uplifted customer satisfaction mm-hmm. or whatnot this much, and this was the impact. Then you get people who start valuing those measures and believing in their tie to true financials.
You cannot do this work unless you're tying financials to it. You just can't do it. Not anymore, certainly. And no one has the luxury, right? And I think that's like Harley, Manning, and Forrester. I think they talk a lot about that stuff. We've been talking about solutioning. You talk about solutioning in the book, and you kind of outline four very simple steps. Where do you think the breakdown is in solutioning where you've seen it also fail there? I mean, we know what the five mistakes are, which are, right? Like, where in the solutioning process do you think, whether it's a CX team or a business, struggles the most? And how do you fix that? Is probably the real question here. But
yeah, so I would say one of the largest things is companies tend to have more of a strength in their vision or their execution. And when I say execution, I'm going to talk about very specifically their internal strategic initiatives, not their execution of what they're doing for customers. Mm-hmm. And so they tend to have a strength in one or the other. And so one of the main issues is not getting to the root cause, you know, using the five whys to say, okay, why is that happening? Why is that happening? And so you're fixing something in the middle, but not at the core. And as an example, I worked for a company once, and one of their most significant root issues was around shared language or shared lexicon. The language they were using internally across different departments and in front of customers was different. So we're confusing customers because we're using terms like discovery, requirements, diagnostic, and customers are confused. They don't know this is all the same thing. Mm-hmm. And teams are confused because they don't know it's in essence the same thing and they're using different templates. And so getting to that type of root is one of the issues. The other significant one is prioritizing, and that comes down to, when are you prioritizing centrally? Because if you're not, all of your teams are doing grassroots prioritization. And in the book, I actually used an example of how many resources are consumed by these grassroots prioritizations that if you centralize prioritization, you could apply to these substantial initiatives that you think you don't have time for. And related to prioritization, a lot of times leaders expect their leadership team to lead these strategic initiatives. It's that run the business, change the business. I think I can say never seen the same leader run the business and change the business at the same time.
Can't do that ever.
No.
Yeah, you cannot do that. You're right. 100%.
It's running the business will always take priority in the day to day. And so that's another challenge with prioritization. The other is the shiny penny. The latest CX article says you should. It's like, oh, let's go do that. And that comes back to, when you don't demonstrate value early and often, then you lose the buy-in because people are waiting for that 4-year mark when you've promised them something.
I am. There's a reason why shiny object syndrome, the acronym is SOS, like save me from this, right? Like,
yes, it's painful. So having said that, what have you seen as kind of one of the reasons things aren't getting traction?
So one is absolutely being able to tie what you're doing back. Like one, you have to start off with business strategy.
Amen.
Like what are the objectives of this business? What do you want to deliver? Where's the firm going? And you said this before, then you start thinking about, okay, what are the CX strategies to help drive these items, right? These you know, objectives and the broader strategic elements. Then what are the metrics the business uses to measure success? And tying what you do from a CX strategy and tactics perspective to those operational metrics or financial metrics. Mm-hmm. Absolutely have to do that. The other thing that I've been seeing a lot is with the proliferation of agile and these big agile transformations, I've almost seen, right? And agile to me is a vehicle to deliver a better customer experience.
Absolutely. Yes.
And it's awesome. I have huge respect for scrum masters, people and, you know, developers, business people, everyone is sort of in the agile community. The problem that I've seen is two things. One is you can't solve, and I think Einstein actually said this too, like you can't solve tomorrow's problems with today's people or something to that effect. That's one. So like, you know, it's a new toolkit, but you need new, fresh thinking in there. And that sometimes is not the case. So you're solving problems with a new toolkit and a way to deliver a better customer experience, but the thinking isn't there. The mindset's that is not there. Number two along that line is those teams are like, well, I've got a 2-week sprint. I don't have time to go talk to the customer. And I can't wait for the annual survey that our company does to be able to figure out what is needed here. So I think that this is what they need. I'm going to design it. We're going to develop it. We're going to deliver it. And then the feedback comes back a year later and you're like, oh my gosh, we got to change this. Right. Yep. And the interconnectivity, so that cross-functional nature of organizations, large and small, frankly, really needs to happen more. And you mentioned, you know, Gene Bliss, the duct tape piece, whether it's the CX team or not, like someone needs to play that cross-functional role to say, we're all working towards the same, like a shared vision and goal and objective. We need to do this in a coordinated way. I love the idea or the concept of the CX leader being in that role. I think it makes a lot of sense because at the end of the day, we all want to do what's right for the customer. But for some reason, that doesn't happen that often or as often as it should. And maybe it's happening because they're pulling Johnny out of the call center or, you know, whatever business or out of the sales org. Maybe it doesn't happen because of budget and resources and they think customer experience is expensive. And it can be. It really, you can spend millions and millions of dollars on new capabilities, shiny objects, as you said. But I think that's those two things for me, like one, starting with like, what do we want as a business? And then figuring out how to CX fit into that. That to me is like the biggest one. And that's not thinking that is intuitive for whatever reason. But it's really out there and it's a big problem. And I get questions, I get more questions on that more than any other thing, actually. All right. This has been a great question. I've got a question, one last question for you. You've written this book. It's been out for a couple months. What's next for you? Like, are you thinking about another book? Is there any like cool research that you guys are thinking about doing that's different and cutting edge? Like, what do you guys think? Do you mind? And if you don't want to say, hey, I cannot share it, that's fine. That's an answer. That's absolutely an answer. We can move on.
No, it's a great question. So I'll kind of bucket it into two categories. The two things that we are focused on right now for our clients that are distinct for this point in time is where we have a 30-day revenue challenge. It's how to recapture revenue. And so it's a 30-day very defined approach that is, we guarantee 10x results.
Wow.
Yeah. And we're in partnership with another company that we deliver this. And so that's been really exciting because it is so desperately needed by some companies in industries that were hit hard by COVID. The other area that we are really helping clients that we have done in the past, but it hasn't been a substantial portion of our business and is right now, is helping SMB leaders find their next role at a company where they can make max impact. So whether it's existing clients or people of existing clients know that they lost their position, they were furloughed, whatever that is, and helping them get plugged into a company that is a fit so that they can.
Really interesting.
Yeah. And it's because we love SMB and we want these companies to thrive and we want the leaders in the spots that can help them thrive. And so we were in the perfect spot to do that. But then in terms of the thought leadership and the fun stuff we're working on, we are working with Jeff Bean, who you have since met.
Yeah.
And we're working on a business case ROI model. And I'll actually say a guidebook similar to the first book I wrote in terms of it being really practical, but that is based on how you do your business case or ROI today. So I'm not going to unveil this is the gold standard of how you should be building it out. It is identify yourself in one of these categories of how you're doing it today, and then let's level it up one step at a time so that you're moving towards a more mature way of building out these business cases and ROI. But you're not trying to go from an Excel spreadsheet that has, you know, three or four cells in it to a mega business case for a, you know, X million dollar digital transformation. So that's what we're working on right now. And it's cool. Yeah, it's exciting to put together practical tools. I'm all about practical. But in terms of writing another book, this guidebook, I wouldn't consider to be the same scope of the book I wrote, which is only, I think, 64 pages. I don't know if I'll write another book. I don't have an idea right now that compels me to think I have something that I want to communicate. And it was a super painful process to write that.
Oh my gosh. I'm sorry to hear that. Well, it's pretty cool that you did it though. I mean, that's a great accomplishment.
I mean, I learned a lot in terms of how to bring in the people that can help you and coach you. But the coaching I got was probably for more of a standard brained person than me. And so it was really messy and I'm happy with how it turned out, but I wouldn't call it a good time.
So maybe you'll hold off on that for a little bit.
Probably. So we'll see. If I get an idea that compels me to write one again, then I will. But right now it's more in these focus, whether it turns out to be an ebook or a tool that is more narrow in scope.
So I'm excited for the workbook or whatever you want to call it, because that is a huge problem today. And what do you have a timeline for that? I'm actually curious. And I'm sure our listeners are probably asking that too.
Yeah, I would really like to get out a piece of this that is actionable by the end of the year.
Very cool.
We're really trying to build in to some of the levels of maturity aspects of benchmarking. And one of the challenges is we're not going to have you benchmark against a Fortune 50 company if you're an SMB. That doesn't make sense. It's not applicable. And so there are pockets of research. It's just a lot more pocketed. So looking at how we can deliver value early and often for companies, and then at the same time, get this to a place where companies can grow with it. So after they take their first step, they can take their second, third, and fourth.
So cool. All right. Last question. I'm sure you've got a busy day. You're running a company, for crying out loud. The work that you're doing with SMB leaders and finding other organizations, that's inspiring. So, and I'm sure that is inspiring for you, but do you, like, from a CX perspective, like, where do you go for inspiration?
Oh, I am inspired by probably an odd assortment of leaders and probably not the typical name that people would rely on. The one that I would say that is probably most relatable is Herb Kelleher, that you know, was founded Southwest. But really my inspiration comes from founders and small business leaders who their gut instinct around customer experience is bar none. They are doing things that, or they, when they founded their company, they were doing things for the customer that are so innovative. And then a lot of times we are brought in because operationally that wasn't embedded into their company as they were scaling. So we just need to get that embedded in so they can recapture that heart, vision, et cetera. So one of my clients, Pilates.com, we had worked with them. Their CEO, just brilliant in terms of serving customers. I have other businesses I follow, whether it's, you know, hairstylists or restaurants, where their leaders just think so differently. And that really is what inspires me. And I follow companies around the world that are smaller but growing. And that is what gets me excited.
Very cool. And those are the businesses that people keep on going back to every day, right? And you know that. You can see that and feel that. Mm-hmm. This has been an awesome conversation. So many great takeaways. Jessica, well, thanks so much for coming on the show.
My pleasure.
It was great to have you on. It's been my distinct pleasure and honor. And thanks for the gift of your time. And thanks, everyone, for listening. See you next week.
We're out. Talk to you soon, everyone.
Thanks for listening to Be Customer-Led with Bill Stakos. We are grateful to our audience for the gift of their time. Be sure to visit us at BeCustomerLed.com for more episodes. Leave us feedback on how we're doing or tell us what you want to hear more about. Until next time, we're out. We'll be right back.